Would you mind using
I just want to make a statement of encouragement, really. I'm a youth worker from Wales, and I would say that the majority of the young Christians that I'm seeing who are really going on with God are the guys. They're much stronger and more firm in their faith than the girls are. So looking towards the future, actually I see an amazing future.
Brilliant.
In the church.
That's encouraging.
Yeah.
Hope that carries on. I hope we don't need to exist. So either means you're all in complete and utter unanimous agreement with me, you're in stunned submission, or you so violently disagree you can't even be bothered to express an opinion, which is fine. No, it's fine. I'm a pussycat, really. I'm not saying we've got all the answers, they're just some suggestions, and because I've hodgepodge, there'll be glaring holes in some of what I'm saying, because I haven't been able to fill in the gaps around it tonight. But I'm hopefully giving you a bit of a taster. It's a long-term process, basically, a lot of this. But we are seeing turnaround across the country. And I agree with you. We're seeing some guys come up who are incredibly passionate about their faith. I just hope it continues, because the typical hemorrhage for young men is about age 18 to 21, 22, drop away again. Because as they emerge into the church culture we've currently got, which is basically an inherited Victorian model of church, they switch out very quickly. I believe in church passionately. It's not trying to undermine the church. I just think we've got some work to do. Yes,
what do you think about men doing actions to children's songs in church? Do you think that maybe that might actually put people off?
I think it can certainly put some men off, particularly when we're quite forceful about it. I was in one church once where the female worship leader said, "You men, you're not doing the actions. If you don't do the actions, you're glorifying the devil." I thought, oh no, Jack, watch all these guys just switch off, you know. And can they put people off? No, I mean, I think, you know, I go to kids' parties and I, not as a party entertainer, I go to my kids' parties and I join in and I play with them and stuff. And I think the problem is if it feels just too contrived and it's a bit forced and, you know, it's a bit embarrassing and cheesy, then, you know, that's when it doesn't work. Because actually I think most fathers like seeing their kids having a fun time. So I don't have too much of a problem with it, but as a pastor I wouldn't do it every week. And I wouldn't do it all the time, you know, I wouldn't force it. And you'd make it so zany and crazy and say the odd fun thing for the adults just to try and show them that we're actually trying to give the kids a good time here. I mean, I'm not a personal big fan. I just like my kids to have fun, you know. So.
Thank you very much. Just a question about where to start, really. Chicken or the egg. You know, when it's such a huge mountain, it feels to climb, it's a change of the tide. You start changing the church and the worship on Sundays. You start friendships and relationships and how that's going. I mean, it's not going to happen overnight. So
no.
There's a long way to go, where do you say, let's start?
Well, talking from personal experiences, inherited a church. It was a very traditional Baptist church, which had traditional modes of ministry and worship styles and stuff. And what I actually started to do was, and I could do this because I was leading the church, I'd use very blokey language for the fun, very, you know, the style I'm using tonight. The way I'm speaking to you is the way I speak. I just speak like this all the time. I don't go into a mode. So I did that. And I'd use work illustrations. I'd do some of the stuff I'm saying here. I would ordain and commission people in their jobs, and I'd plan for testimony. These are the simple first steps. I get blokes up to talk about their work or how God's intervened, you know. And I started changing our sermon series. So I'd have occasional series called Have I Got News For You, which basically just did very topical stuff out of the newspapers and applying it to scripture. And you know, just engaging men in real life, and a lot of banter going on as well, but not dishonourable stuff, but just good, friendly male banter. And out of that, we also had a big review of what worship songs we did, and we compiled a list of 200 songs that we would use, and no others, unless we had a meeting together, the worship leaders decided to include it. And we got rid of probably 80% of the subjective worship songs. So that's how we started. Actually, I never wanted to see a men's group in the church, a men's group per se. I didn't just want to see that because I knew that it had just become a bolt-on. What I wanted was a church that was good for blokes. And the men's group was an expression of that. And the interesting thing was that we also grew very fast with women. Because they got the bit between the teeth, and they were saying, "Oh, well, we think we'll do something then," you know. So it was quite a good energy stir. But we started with the language on the front. We had a big review of the way we communicated, our approach and style at the front, and the worship songs we used. And that's where it started, and that flowed through the church. We gave permission for men to be men in church life. And one of the things I did do is, very early on as well, was this established the sort of pastoral power base of you're the expert at the front who's got all the answers. Because I think it's quite disempowering for men. Because all they hear about is, you know, you've got the anointing, Carl, you're the leader, you're the spiritual man, we're just, you know, I'm just an accountant. So we got rid of that culture. And actually started to reverse it and say, actually, you guys are the important ones. Keep saying every week, you are the ministers of the gospel. You know, when you go to work, that's your spiritual act of worship. You know, I covet you. You know, I wish I had the life you lead, but God has called me to this because I'm here to coach you and empower you because you're the ones who are going to make a change and difference. So, and that was communicated all the time, every week. And go out and visit them in their workplaces and stuff. You know, and as they start to get encouraged and inspired, that feeds into the culture of the church thing. It's long term. Does that help? Just got to start somewhere. It's the small things lead to big things. Well, I put a man in front, in charge of our all our junior church stuff. He was a drug squad detective, actually, and a real man's man. But I put him in charge of all the Sunday school, and he was awesome. Their kids loved him, and there was a subtle. It wasn't a pressure. It wasn't a condition. But if you had a baby in a church, we did say to people, you know, we expect you to take a stint, if you can, you know, once every 6 weeks. Said dad's name. Go up and be with your kids. And don't have to lead anything, don't have to necessarily prepare anything, unless you feel led that way. But just go up and be there and see what's going on. So the kids were seeing men up there. But because it was in the context of a bloke-friendly church, it wasn't seen as a stigma. Because the guy leading the icky, bickly little kids was a BT telecoms engineer. He's just an ordinary working class guy, but he's just really good with the little tiddly ones, you know.
Have you got any resource material for men leading, for male Sunday school leaders?
No, that's a good idea. Sounds like I've got a job there. But we have got lots of good examples of different stuff that men have done we can pull in for you. That's an interesting one.
Do you think the rise in binge culture is perhaps one of the reasons why churches are turned off from it?
Binge culture? Because we're sending out a message that's restrictive and
It's just this. I think a lot of people nowadays, their interest is for drinking.
Just by way of an example in that, wherever I just moved to this area outside Bath 15 months ago. One of the first things I do when I go to somewhere is I ask God to give me some relationships with ordinary blokes. And so now I'm in this group that goes cycling every week, and I've got a couple of other mates that I knock around with here and there. Now, one of these guys was quite a committed gambler. It's not the binge drinking, but he was binging on gambling, you know. But I didn't know this. And I basically bumped into him in the park one day, and to cut a long story short, turned out his wife was also goes to the same school. My wife was dropping the kids off, blah, blah, blah. It's all a big coincidence. So we started meeting them for drinks and stuff and meals and stuff like that. And then one day, just driving along with him, and driving along in the car, sorry, and I just sort of prompted to phone him and said, how about I grab a couple of beers and come over and see you tonight? He said, great, because my wife's going out. So I took a couple of beers around and we got talking. He looked me straight in the eye. I've met him 6 times on my own at this point, so we're not great mates. He looked me straight in the eye and he said, I'm so glad you came over tonight. He said, because I've lost a heck of a lot of money on online gambling yesterday, and I didn't know who to tell. And I said, well, you told me now. Do you feel better? And he went, yeah, I'm just glad I told someone. He said, I don't want to talk about it anymore, I just want to tell someone. And that's it. And then we left it. We talked about football and fishing and other things the rest of the evening. I thought, you know, and he's just to finish the story, he and his wife were baptised a month ago. And that was the bit that broke through. Now, I found that relationship cuts through a lot of all of that stuff. Now, I found that being there for people, because I think we're designed to spend more time with other people. I think that's what we're meant to be doing, which is spending time with people. And I think when you invest time, whether they're binge drinking, binge gambling, being violent, whatever it is, it cuts right through. And I've seen that through every step of my ministry. My first ministry was working in a complete binge drinking culture, drug and drink binging. And we saw a lot of people come to faith because it was all based on building good, solid relationships with people. But I think that cuts through. It really does. I think that cuts through whatever the style of worship and teaching is in the church. It's about relationship, really. Because why are they drinking anyway? They sort of mask for something else, isn't it? Okay.
So, being a men's group coordinator, you don't often get resources like Carl coming along. Lots of ideas have sprung to mind from what you've just said. But I just wondered, since we've got some ladies here tonight, have you got anything particularly about how women can draw men into church? You were drawn into church and to your faith by a woman.
That's a good question. No. Well, there is a couple of things to say about that. I think firstly to women who are believers who've got a husband who isn't yet a believer, one of the things I think can completely drive men away is sometimes just being too in their faces. You know, you've got to trust the Lord often and just work long term with guys. I typically saw, for instance, in my church, one extreme example was a wife, a lovely lady, loved a bit. But, you know, she'd have Premier Radio on all the time and had Bertie stuck up in the shower so that, you know, her husband would see him when he was having a wash in the morning, and, you know, subscribing to everything under the sun and always got the God Channel on. And I took this bloke out for a beer once and he said, what the heck are you doing to my wife? She's driving me nuts. And I talked to the wife, you know, with my wife, and she'd say, you need to do something with my husband. You know, he's just not finding God. I think that's because you're in his face too much. Leave the bloke alone. You know, so I think that's one thing I'd say to a believing wife who's got a vanity, because I know it's a painful journey. I know my wife's parents experienced that long haul, so I know that can be very painful. But in terms of a believing lady drawing a bloke into church, but that's It's a really tricky one, isn't it? It's almost like using alluring attractiveness for evangelism. It's a tricky one. I don't know how far to push that one, really. All I would say is that one of the things that drew me to the church about both the men and the women that were there was that they had integrity. And I think there's huge pressure on women, particularly, you know, where we're seeing church culture with not many men. There's a lot of pressure to compromise. And I can understand that. And that's something I experienced in the past a lot. A lot of our women in our church, single women, felt under pressure to compromise to form a relationship with a guy. And it's very easy for me to stand out here and say, you just got to trust God. But my experience has been of seeing believing women actually form really good relationships that end up in marriage has been that they did trust God for the right man to come at the right time and just waited on him. And it has come to pass with every woman that we prayed for in that situation, the church we were in. And I'm just doing a wedding actually on the 16th of June for a brilliant young girl who really held out for a long haul. You just got to hold on to your integrity, really. But I think that's true of single guys too. Pressure is massive to compromise, you know, a life of discipleship. Very painful.
Well, first of all, the good news is one of the ministries that we're involved in Watford is Street Angels, and it's basically street pastoring. We go out into the town centre on Friday and Saturday night, and yeah. We have found that literally it's the guys yeah. that just keep coming up to us.
Yeah.
Now, I think I'm right saying we haven't seen an awful lot of fruit in terms of a lot of guys then wanting to come to church, but then what you said about having to hear the gospel, you know, X yeah. number of times, I think kind of would fit in with that.
Yeah.
But it's very, very encouraging. We don't set out to only talk to guys,
yeah.
but as we just walk around, you know, every 10 minutes, a guy will come up to us and he will want to talk about God. He won't even be wanting to sort of fool around or, you know, have a joke or something. He wants to, you know,
yeah,
talk
I agree,
seriously.
Absolutely.
So I think that's really quite encouraging. What is not so encouraging, though, is the fact that this does all take time. And I really appreciate what you said about for Christian women that are single, we need to wait on the Lord and trust in God. But, you know, there are realities of God's creation that we have to respect, such as the biological clock. Such as the
biological clock. Yeah.
You know, it's not really, you know, it's
I know,
not really
I hear
an
you.
Answer.
Yeah.
What I'm sort of now kind of thinking about is, in the Bible it says we mustn't be yoked with an unbeliever.
Yeah.
It doesn't say we mustn't be yoked with a non-churchgoer. Now, there are a lot of men in the world that would say they believe in God, and I think they do have a genuine faith. You know, they don't
yeah.
believe that they're the captain of their own soul. But if the women wait until these guys become, you know, churchgoers and kind of, you know, fully fledged Christians, the women are going to be barren. You know, I mean, I sort of hold parties for single men and women, mostly for women because there are so many more of them. But it's just not really a solution, I think. It's almost putting God to the test, and it's a placebo drug given to women.
I haven't actually talked about church attendance. I'm not suggesting someone's a believer because they go to church. So I have no dispute with what you're saying there at all. All I would say is it's an issue of your own conscience and your own wisdom and judgment, isn't it? Because I've seen people's lives wrecked when they've pushed the boundary too far. Literally wrecked. I've seen a lot of guys say just the right things because the woman's showing them a lot of attention and then form a relationship only to then later renege on various promises and words of commitment, which has just caused tragedy, you know. It's an incredibly painful issue, and I wouldn't dispute anything you're saying, and I've never equated church attendance to a committed faith. But what I have found is that where there is a genuine committed faith, they generally want to be with other believers, no matter how bad or good the church is. But it's an issue of your own conscience and walk, isn't it?
Yeah, Yeah, and it's a case of, I understand what you said about, you know, there are sort of tragic situations, but it's also very tragic for a woman.
I understand.
That, you know, has to be a barren spinster all her life because there's no men.
I know.
But there are believing men in the world, so it's not a straightforward scenario.
No, it's not at all. So one of the interesting things is, I often wonder how the church would look if we were faced with intense persecution, as happens in most of the world. Now, we are an anomaly on the face of the planet, actually, in that we've got a clear opening to be spreading the gospel in this country at the moment. In most of the world, that's not happening. In much of the world, you're faced with imprisonment or persecution, even martyrdom for your faith. And I wonder what their response would be to some of those sorts of issues. I think that tends to sharpen our thinking. I think there's a war being waged against us in a different way here, which is wearing down our long-term resistance and ability to hold the line. But that's not a genuine counter to what you're saying. I'm just saying that I think we've got to have our spiritual eyes wide open at the moment. Because whereas in some countries there is a clear front line and a clear battle being waged, actually the warfare we're up against in this country is guerrilla warfare. And the enemy is playing a long-term game of just wearing our resistance down and wearing our integrity down and diluting our message. And so we just seem to be very, very wise. But, you know, having been a pastor for over a decade in one place, I've seen exactly the pain you're talking about. Never had an easy answer. Tough one.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with men being men, but what about men that are, you know, coming more in touch with their feminine side as well?
The metrosexual
man. We are
all made
in God's image.
Yeah.
So God is feminine and God is masculine at the same time.
Yeah. Well, you just adapt what we're suggesting for the men that you're dealing with, don't you? Mm-hmm. And lots of the guys that I was working with who are in their sort of late teens, early 20s, are into facial products and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I'm a classic working class bloke, and I can only talk out of my experience. I've been, as I was saying to Andy earlier around the place, I've been kind of gentrified by doing a couple of degrees and going to Bible college and becoming a reverend and all that kind of stuff and learning how to play the piano and the guitar. But actually, so I can only really generally share from where I am as a man, but I appreciate as a pastor that not everyone was my sort of bloke. So you just adapt to the men you're dealing with. For instance, tomorrow I'm going to go and see a church that was a plant out of St. Helens, which is dealing with a very arty sector of the community, almost specifically, very sort of musical, artistic people. Most of the men they've got are more feminine. And I'm actually going there to consult with them how to put some men's stuff together and some mission stuff together, and I'll be saying some very different things. But obviously when I'm doing an evening like this, you just generally hit the middle ground, don't you? Although I would suggest that I did put a picture of Short Matt Bowles up, which I would not class as an overtly testosterone-laden activity. But yeah, you just gear it to the men that you're dealing with, don't you? You have to adapt your things to all people, I guess.
You know, men don't know their place anymore, do they?
No.
Men,
and they will
women
abdicate
are losing all kinds of respect for
well,
men.
That is true, and that's a whole different presentation. So there were some massive gaps in what I had to say, and we do a lot of stuff on the position of men in society. One thing I would suggest is that women tend to be incredibly multi-gifted and multi-talented at just about everything. Men are pretty rubbish at most things, but they're pretty good at leadership. If you take leadership away from blokes, they haven't got much else left, really, because we're good at carrying the can and taking the hit and being a shield and protector. If you take that responsibility away from us, which society has tried to do, we don't have huge amounts left. So that's a big issue for guys. And when men have their responsibilities taken away from them, they will abdicate it very quickly and quite willingly. They're like sleeping lions. Go and bring me my dinner, darling, while I lay in the sun. You know, so we do need to teach men what their position is and their position in society is and what their responsibilities are, but then there is a responsibility upon the women to allow them to be that. It cuts both ways. And what we often found in my church was as the men became empowered, and we had women in every sector of ministry in the church, now very empowered in our church, but as the men started to become empowered, the women actually got a bit edgy about it. I felt actually quite threatened by that, because for years they've been running all the intercession and the Sunday school and, you know, all the midweek groups, and suddenly mothers and toddlers wasn't mothers and toddlers, it was the toddler group, where we had blokes who were shift there as well, and blokes attending and running it and things, and suddenly men were being involved in church life. The women got very edgy about that. Why are you doing all this men stuff? And I had one meeting with sort of a power broker woman in the church, who said, well, actually, we've all been moaning at you, but actually, I've got to confess to you, we've been praying for 10 years that someone would come along and raise the men up. But when it happens, I'm just saying, it might not happen for you, but when it happens, a lot of women feel just very uncomfortable. So it cuts both ways. On the one hand, we need to raise the men up. On the other hand, the women need to give the men permission. Because this is the beautiful thing about God's creation, actually. Is that actually, if you take the whatever your theology is of the role of men and women, you know, the way that my marriage works is that I am head of my home in a godly way. You know, I'm not lord of my home. I just take responsibility for my wife and my kids. I feel that I have a responsibility for setting the spiritual atmosphere, the tone of my family, the way we engage as a family. I feel that is a responsibility from God. But I tell you what, unless my wife gives me permission to do that, she holds all the power. Because if she doesn't want me to do that, she can hold that back from me. And that's the beautiful thing. You know, wives submit to your husbands, husbands wife your wives, like Christ of the church. Your husbands, you lay down your life for your wife and your family. And wives, your job is to show that beautiful submission of the church to Jesus. But actually, the way it works is, unless the wife voluntarily does that intelligently, I can't force Karen to do anything if I'm truly laying down my life for her. So when everyone gets titty and a bit uppity about male headship and stuff, they've missed the point. It's actually about harmony. But the women need to give the men permission, and permission to make mistakes. That means that my responsibility is to apologise first. Be gracious, patient, all that kind of stuff. Be honouring. There's loads more I could go into. It's all sort of creeping out now, isn't it?
Carl, I think, I don't know if there are any more questions. It's been very rich evening, I think, for certainly for me, and I think I can speak for everybody here. We've learnt a lot, and given far more than was billed, actually, particularly towards the end. And I think we would like to thank you.
Thank you. Cheers.
Secondly, there are resource issues that we have to consider. And we have also asked for contributions towards Carl's ministry and the Ministry of Christian Vision for Men. So if you can spare a bit of cash, there'll be a pot at the side here. It's completely voluntary. You don't have to pay for anything at all. But if you would like to support the work of Christian Vision for Men, then please would you put some money in the pot. Thirdly, we do have a little bit of wine and orange juice left. Don't rush off. Do grab Carl if you've got something that you want
to say.
That's
a male small talk, you know, because
that you wouldn't dream of saying into a microphone or onto a tape. And finally, men's group St Mary's, and indeed, I think perhaps we can talk more broadly for Watford. We have lots of events going on, and we're very happy to share those events with the rest of the community. And in fact, there's one spring breakfast that we've got coming up, I think towards the end of April, where we're hoping to invite along a big name sports person, preferably a footballer, to come along and have a breakfast at the Watford Football Club, which will be open to any Christians in the town. Now, this all depends on getting the right person along, and we haven't found that person yet. But that maybe is an event that you could invite some of the men that you meet in the high street at 2 o'clock on a Sunday morning. They might be interested in coming along and listening to a Christian footballer speaking at Watford Football Club. That's an idea. If it happens, we'll certainly let everybody know. But thank you all for coming. It's been great. Don't rush off. Do stay and chat and think about things. And again, thank you very much to Carl. Really good.